Grade to trade, buy low, sell high. We're helping you make some early season trades. I just made a trade offer in one of our Roto leagues for Trevor.
Get turned down, I bet.
I'd probably get turned down. It was an introductory offer for Trevor Story.
All right. You're trying to trade for Trevor Story.
I'm the Jose Reyes owner. I am also the AJ Pollock owner, who doesn't think his team really has a chance to win unless he hits a home run, pun intended. So, trading Aaron Sanchez and Alcides Escobar for Trevor Story. Easy reject for the other guy?
I don't know about easy.
All right, good. It'll get the dialogue going.
I mean, if it was a points league and you get that sparpdom from Aaron Sanchez, that'd be one thing.
Oh, that's true.
But just as a general pitcher.
You're right. Pretty easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, thanks.
You had to think about it a little bit, at least. welcome to Wednesday's show, April 13th. We do have a lot of your trades. And what we're going to do today is talk about some of your trade proposals and just basically discuss players and their values. And also, Al and Scott hopefully have some buy low and sell high candidates. I have a few that I can throw it at you. But we'll also talk about Noah Syndergaard, Juan Nicasio, Sean Doolittle, DFS if we have time. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And if you need some DFS advice, well, you can get that on the Daily Fantasy Live podcast that you can hear. You know, you hear Heath and Chris all the time. Heath, Chris, and Mike on that show do a very, very good job. I listened to yesterday's show. It was excellent. So Daily Fantasy Live podcast. And go to sportsline.com if you want some baseball predictions. Sportsline.com/podcast. Sign up for $10 a month. Woo, guys. Did you watch the Marlins-Mets game yesterday? Wowzers.
I did.
I couldn't.
Why?
Because of MLB TV's blackout policy.
But you live in Florida.
I know. Exactly.
But no cable, right?
Those are the games that get blacked out. Oh, who has cable these days? Come on.
Oh, you're in a cable.
See, I'm an old guy. I haven't cut the cord yet.
Cord cutting is probably the most millennial thing I do.
I'm still very much on cable. But yeah, so let's reassess Noah Syndergaard. Are you moving Noah Syndergaard up in your rankings? This guy threw 99 pitches, 72 strikes with 22 swinging strikes and 7 innings with 12 strikeouts. Yeah, he's pretty incredible right now. What do you guys think about Syndergaard?
You know, we had a bold predictions show. And there was a bold predictions article too. We made bold prediction before the start of the season. And, you know, we had to limit the number we had. One that was left on the cutting room floor for me was that Carlos Correa and Noah Syndergaard would be your two Cy Young Award winners this year.
Carlos Carrasco.
Yeah, you're right.
That's the
second time I've done that.
That is the second time.
Carlos Carrasco and Noah Syndergaard.
That is bold, Scott.
The reason I cut it is because in the same column, we actually predict Cy Young winners, and those were mine. So my regular prediction and my bold prediction would have contradicted each other. But, gosh, I still don't know that I could pick Syndergaard over Kershaw, but it's between those two. If you were asking me today who'd be the NL Cy Young winner, it would be between those two.
Well, now you got to move him up to number two in your rankings. Are you ready to do that?
No, I don't. No, okay. No. Fantasy rankings are a different thing.
Well, why?
I will move him up.
That would be a bold contradiction.
Yeah, I would.
Well, why not move him? I mean, look, I would move him up to two, but why not?
It's a level of confidence thing. I mean, it's one thing to say, I think this guy's going to win this award, because if he doesn't, what happens? You know, it's another thing to trade, you know, Max Scherzer for Noah Syndergaard, you know,
yeah,
in fantasy and live with those repercussions if it doesn't work out. So, you know, it's just a different animal, I think.
Al, what about you? Where are you on Syndergaard?
Yeah, not number two or number three, but I'm going to move him up. So I keep a list of players I need to move up. I just added him to it. I went shortcut though and typed Thor, fewer characters. but I'm gonna say probably top eight.
Okay, so he's looking good. You know, my concerns were he threw 198 and two thirds last year, majors and minors combined. He threw 133 the year before. Pretty significant jump of 65 and two-thirds innings. It scared me, and it seems to have affected Jacob deGrom. It might be affecting Matt Harvey. We're not sure, but so far, so good for Syndergaard.
Yeah, he's a Norse god, so I think he can hold up.
I mean, it's really like, it's amazing. It's watching complete brilliance out there. It's staggering 90, how good he's been.
Mid-90s slider.
Yeah.
And low 90s changeup, I mean. I almost wonder if that's too fast for a changeup, but I guess if you're throwing 98, it's not.
Yeah, that is amazing. Guys, what stood out to you in Tuesday's action? Well, I don't think it was the most, I got to go to the waiver wire and get this guy kind of day, but it was a fun day of baseball. Actually, some really good games yesterday. What stood out to you?
Yeah, and I agree. Nothing really truly stands out, but one thing I was looking to check out yesterday was Aaron Sanchez's performance, and I didn't find it really all that reassuring in terms of buying into the first start. I know the end result was pretty good, but he was back to having some control issues, and that's kind of the first thing I was looking to have reconfirmed for me, was that he might be leaving those behind. Again, it's just one start, but then again, so was the first start.
And the first start was against the Rays, and this was against the Yankees, a much better lineup. And Sanchez threw six innings, only three hits, but three walks, two runs, one of them earned, and five strikeouts. He did get nine ground ball outs to one flyout. That was pretty nice.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing I figure Sanchez is going to do pretty regularly. It's just, is he going to be able to miss bats and throw strikes in addition to that?
Ultimately, how it changes his value, I think. Like, I think he's good enough, even if he's a three and a half walks per nine guy, to be one of the better sparps for a points league. I don't think you're ever going to drop him in that format. It's just a matter of, is he going to be a pitcher good enough for your roto lineup? That's at least that's where I stand with Sanchez.
Well, what's your gut telling you about that? Because, I mean, I did watch the game, and he throws hard, and he's got a big hook. And he's got a nice developing changeup right now. Look, things can change. Once these hitters see these pitchers multiple times as starters, they might pick up on something. Things can change. But right now, I think he looks pretty good. And I included him in that trade offer for Trevor Story, not because I think Aaron Sanchez is, not because I wasn't impressed or anything like that, just because it's easier to find pitching than it is to find hitting. So what's your gut telling you about Aaron Sanchez in the roto league?
I don't want to declare a verdict on that yet. I don't think there's any reason to. I can tell you there's no way I'm dropping him after this start.
Right.
If I picked him up.
Right. So just kind of wait and see.
That's my take.
Scott and I come at this from a little bit of a different angle, which was I didn't run out and get him after the first start. So I'm certainly not having remorse about that at this point. But if I did have him, I wouldn't be dropping him.
Oh, Al, I gotta ask you something. How is it that you already own Nomar Mazara before he got called up in our Memorial Roto League?
Because I think that was a reserve round pick, but in the late and reserve rounds, I try to pick up two or three prospects, and he was one of my favorite prospects coming into this year.
Damn you! I was like, ooh, I'm gonna put a bid on what he's already owned. Now, all right. So Scott, how about a standout from you?
Well, a standout, I guess, kind of like Alan, in a not so great way, was Juan Nicasio, who had his first bad start of 2016, which sounds funny because it was the second start officially, but of course had many a good start in spring training, which I guess people are just ready to forget about. I don't know. His ownership percentage as of this morning was still 88, correct, Adam?
Yes.
I had a tweet in the middle of his rocky start yesterday, when it was pretty clear he wasn't going to be able to turn things around. And it was basically just saying, today's not Nicasio's day, but I think he's earned himself a bit of a leash in fantasy. And the reaction I got to that tweet, which I thought was, pretty mild take, was overwhelmingly and unanimously negative. Like, what has he earned?
That's ridiculous.
It was just they were disagreeing strongly.
If somebody dropped Nicasio in one of your leagues, would you pick him up?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and that's the point I tried to make to some of them. Like, I don't know that this guy's going to be great. I mean, obviously he wouldn't be the first guy to dominate in spring training and then fall flat on his face once the season started. That happened to both Zach McAllister and Kendall Graveman last year. But I think between, I mean, just the stuff he has, the good spring, the good first start, I mean, at least carried over to the first start, and the fact he has Ray Searidge as his pitching coach, I mean, you got to give him a pass for one bad start. Now, if he's just as bad next time out, maybe we could talk about releasing him, at least in leagues where the relief pitcher eligibility isn't important. But there's no way that's happening now. And I feel like a lot of the response I got was just, you know, kind of a sour grapes thing, because his ownership percentage hasn't changed from then to now. So yeah, we'll see if it does. But I have a feeling most of his owners are going to decide, yeah, what's on waivers isn't as exciting as he could potentially be.
There's, now, if I'm, yeah, go ahead, Al.
I was going to say, if I'm going to sort of fault, that's maybe too strong a word, but fault Aaron Sanchez for not throwing many strikes and not getting many whiffs in the start yesterday, then, you know, I have to take Nicasio to task to the same level. He threw 52 strikes on 94 pitches. It got two swings and misses.
It was ugly.
It was very horrible. Ugly. There's no way to to make that look good.
It was cold, though. I think that's worth pointing
out. Well, yeah, actually, he said that the weather was the same in his first start.
Oh, okay.
So, because I thought about that too. Now, here's the thing about Nicasio. He said that his mechanics were off and he had no fastball command. And if you watch the game, he was just terrible in every way. But this is what I didn't realize after I got so excited after his first start. And I realize now he throws two pitches. I mean, two pitches, fastball, slider. And that is what concerns, this start doesn't concern me. But what concerns me is two pitches from a starting pitcher. The only guy I can think of that really gets away with that is Chris Archer. And I feel like he'll throw an occasional changeup in there, and he also has one of the best sliders in baseball. That is interesting to me. What about you, Juan Nicasio?
I know that just doesn't really concern me that much. I mean, like you say, you know, you point out the exception of Chris Archer, and you know, he's not the only one who, you know, can be fastball dependent and still, you know, still thrive.
Okay.
I do think it's valid. I mean, there are a lot of unknowns with Nicasio and a lot of reason to think he could fail. But I mean, I think sometimes we especially can get in the habit of analyzing beyond the point that's necessary for playing fantasy effectively.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the bottom line is, what would you get instead of Nicasio? And if it's not something who has as much upside as Nicasio appears to have shown us to this point, then why bother making a change, you know?
Oh, it's very premature to make a change at this point. You can't overreact like that. Plus, the Tigers are good, you know? Let's give them a little bit of credit, too. Well, we've talked about a lot of pitchers. Marcus Semien is 50% owned, and he woke up. He hit two home runs yesterday. He now has three on the season. .259 batting average, three home runs for Marcus Semien. Does this do anything for you guys? Also, his defense was praised yesterday as well. Apparently, he's playing some good defense at short.
You know, that's not totally irrelevant for fantasy, because his horrible struggles for the middle 2 months of last season were attributed by some to his defensive struggles and those carrying over to what he was doing at the plate. So it's certainly a plus if Semien's not having a hard time in the field. And when you look at what he did the other 4 months of 2015, anything he does good like this early on is you know, very reassuring to me, and some definitely pretty high on my list of guys to pick up.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked him more than Suarez coming into the season, and I flip-flopped them after Suarez's first week. May have to flip-flop back. We'll see. I'm not doing it yet, but there's you know, reason to think Semien could certainly overtake him.
Same game, same team. Different feel here, different tone, from the good to the bad. Sean Doolittle. So I read today he gave up his second home run at O.co. I don't even think they call it O.co anymore, do they?
I thought they still did.
Did they? All right, whatever. The Coliseum.
I know.
I didn't know you said you pronounced dot. So that does sound better.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you do.
I think you're right. That's just not how I've been doing it.
Well, he's okay. Given up two home runs, Sean Doolittle, at O.co, and that matches the most he's ever given up at the stadium in a season. It was on a 93-mile-per-hour fastball to Giovanni Soto. Ryan Madsen also gave up two runs on three hits. He actually came in the eighth, Madsen, and he faced the heart of the order. So it looked like a really good sign that they were using Doolittle in the conventional closer way, but then he blew it. So what do you guys think about Doolittle and Madsen right now?
You know, I was writing about them yesterday, and I assumed based on the fact that, you know, one day against the Mariners, Doolittle pitched the eighth, Madsen pitched the ninth for the save, and then the very next day, Madsen pitched the eighth, Doolittle pitched the tenth for the save, that it was a matchups thing. Except in both cases, the guy who came in the eighth was facing the same part of the Mariners order. So I have no idea what that means. I mean, Doolittle's gotten the last two save chances, so I guess he's still the preferred option for saves. But yeah, I'm owning neither in a two relief pitcher league, and probably owning both in a league where you can start three or more.
I will ask you about two deep league targets. They are owned in 5% and 11% of leagues. Yolish Chacin, six scoreless against the Washingtons the Nationals with eight strikeouts.
I kind of like the Washington.
The Washingtons.
Yeah.
And Kendall Graveman with a nice start. Only three strikeouts, but a nice start against the Angels. Any interest in Chacin or Graveman?
Not really either. More interested in Graveman, but what he did against the Angels, I think it's not much of a stretch, I think, from what you can expect to get from him. Again, not a lot of strikeouts, but he'll get the grounders. The Angels are, I think, a pretty easy opponent. So may not get a whole lot better than that, but I don't know that Graveman's going to have a whole lot of stinkers either. I think he'll just be he'll be a good two start guy that you can stream in and out. And in those two start weeks, at least then you can maybe get a helpful number of strikeouts.
Okay. Here are your injuries, news, and notes before we get into the buy lows and the sell highs. Buster Posey didn't start due to a foot injury, but he could start today. Francisco Liriano will miss today's start with a hamstring injury, and Liriano is day to day. Meanwhile, Jacob deGrom could end up on the DL with his lat issue. Brian McCann, bruised toe. The Yankees are confident that that's all it is. They are not ordering more tests, apparently. He will not play today. He will not start today, at least. McCann is day-to-day. Adam Jones was out again with ribcage soreness. Might return today, but it's, been a while. Evan Gattis returned. Will Evan Gattis catch for the Astros? Have we heard any updates on that?
Yeah, I heard that he's going to. It's going to be something that he will be eased into, but that Gattis will do some catching.
That's awesome.
That is huge.
It is huge.
Because, I mean, DH only, he's borderline rosterable, particularly in points league. Roto for the power, you probably have to own him.
And but now let me take
his catcher eligible.
Yeah, well, let me take a second here on this show.
Sure.
To call out somebody in our For the People podcast league. And Scott, you're not going to like this because you took advantage of it.
Oh, I'm the beneficiary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the guy, I'm trying to look up the team here, to the Boston Red Sox for dropping Evan Gattis. Dropping Evan Gattis in a 16-team league? Are you crazy? Now, I'm sure you didn't know he was going to be catcher eligible, but Scott picked him up. You had a higher waiver claim than I did, I'll tell you that. And now you're the beneficiary, as you mentioned, so congratulations, you jerk.
Well, to be... I guess fair. That doesn't seem like the right word, but I'm going to use it. To be fair, Evan Gattis was a 23rd round pick in this 16-team league, which was the very last round. I commented in the chat room at the time, wow, that's a steal. I can't believe I forgot to queue him up. I would have loved to take him a couple rounds earlier than this. But, I mean, if you're going to release a player, you'd think the first player you'd go to would be the last player you drafted. So I guess that's his defense. But yeah, I was all over that when he dropped him. And I didn't even know at the time he was going to be, he could gain catcher eligibility. I was just thinking big source of power in a categories league, and I don't have enough power. So I'll take him.
Yu Darvish could be back in late May, and this is pretty significant. Christian Vasquez approaching a return for the Boston Red Sox, and, reading today on ESPN Boston, how much better he is for the pitching staff and their pitching staff. The Red Sox is really struggling, and the writer on ESPN Boston said they need Christian Vasquez to catch. Meanwhile, Blake Swihart's gotten off to a really bad start, and he dropped a pop-up in foul territory yesterday, and later in that at-bat, Mark Trumbo hit a home run off Clay Buchholz. So, Al, How concerned are you if you're a Swihart owner right now?
I'm really concerned. And just the net effect fantasy wise is terrible because Vasquez, while he is great defensively, is not going to be relevant in just about any fantasy league. But no, I'm very concerned for exactly the reasons that you stated, which is that the Red Sox probably get a lot more value from the catcher position in terms of what he could do for the pitching staff. And that's something they need help with right now. So it seems awfully early to be making this move. But the fact that the Red Sox are doing it so early to me means that this is probably not going to end well for Swihart.
Are we dropping Swihart
for like a Hundley? Like a Nick Hundley?
Sure.
I'd do that.
Okay.
How low would it have to go? You know, I could see like a Wilson Ramos or Miguel Montero.
Well, here's the thing. In one catcher league, Scott, you're already reeling off some of the options. There's a lot of good options available in one catcher league. So I really need to see this fully play out to make this move. You know, so I could certainly, you know, wait by the end of the week if I had to. But in a two catcher league, yeah, I think, you know, you need to start lining up whoever would likely replace Swihart.
You have to dig much deeper for that. Yeah. You might be looking at Hank Conger.
What about buy low, sell high? Let's move to a new subject. Tell me who you're buying low on this early in the season, a week and a half in, or selling high on. Any good candidates? You know, actually, I'll kick it off with Russell Martin because a lot of people have questions about him. 0-83 with no extra base hits, but it's no walks and 11 strikeouts that's really standing out for Russell Martin. Mm. He had 53 walks to 106 strikeouts last year. So do you consider Russell Martin a buy low, or is there genuine concern here?
No, I do consider Martin a buy low. I mean, those are not good indicators, but we're still looking at really small samples here, and it's the sort of thing. I know I say this every April, but this is the sort of patch that could happen to Russell Martin or anybody in the middle of June, and you'd be much more likely probably then to just say, oh, yeah, he's in a slump.
And anybody gets three hits today and their season looks very different all of a sudden. Just look at Justin Upton yesterday. That's basically what happened to him. He entered as a 222 hitter, which I know is an 0-83 like Martin's hitting, but he exited that game batting average well over 300 and a monster home run to center. So,
or flip it around, Robinson Cano, who everybody had fallen in love with after a great spring and the great, three or four games to start the season, has not really done anything since then.
I'm not trying to, you know, dismiss this segment, but just kind of to know where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a single hitter who, my mind's really going to have changed that much. Like, if, you know, it's one thing, the fringy guys you could add or drop off waivers and, you know, who to get excited about, et cetera. That's one thing because you're talking about highly dispensable players in fantasy. But when you're talking about buy low, sell high candidates, you're talking about players who are rostered everywhere. And there's just nothing that any of them could have done a week and a day into the season to really change my opinion.
And I think from my standpoint, I agree with you. What I think for this exercise is maybe you target players that were drafted that owners, you know, they're not that invested in. They would be willing to give up on pretty quickly because they just don't think that much of them. But you do because you know better. So are there any players that fit that description?
Well, yeah. Curtis Granderson definitely comes to mind, who before last night really, I think that was his first extra base hit, in fact.
Yes, it was.
You know, he's walking a lot, which he did last year. So the plate discipline is pretty good. He's also, you know, striking out a fair amount. But again, Granderson's kind of going to be part of what he gives you. I think he's one of the better buy low targets out there. And he was really, I thought, underdrafted anyway. So after a pretty good season last year, I didn't think Granderson was really getting his due. And I think now after a pretty terrible start, I imagine you can get him really cheap, and I still think he could produce as a number three outfielder.
Any other names, guys, that you'd be actively looking to get?
Maybe like Brian Dozier, who, I mean, he does have a home run and a steal, but he's batting 192, and second base has so many alternatives that it's very likely that Brian Dozier has like a Joe Panic or something on his bench that he would feel comfortable slotting in. So if you need a second middle infielder with power. He walks a fair amount for points leagues. I still have him, I think, fourth in my second base rankings. So still one of the higher end players at that deep position.
Tell me how you feel about Rougned Odor right now and the start he's gotten off to. He made two bad defensive plays yesterday as well.
You know, he's a buy low candidate for anyone who's read Heath's article the other day. Because Heath
I confess I saw the headline and I meant to read it and I didn't. Can you tell me what Heath said about Rougned Odor?
Well, a lot of the comments, and I think maybe the headline, you know, I think there's a tendency on the internet everywhere to read the headline, not like it, immediately go to the bottom and comment on the article without having read it.
very mature.
Yeah, I think the point Heath was making, and I don't agree with him, but, you know, it's a fair point to make, is that maybe he misassessed Odor in the first place, less so about the hot start than just, well, maybe I didn't take a close enough look at the stats in the first place, because basically he was harping on the fact that Odor, for, you know, as great as his numbers look when he returned to the majors mid-June on, he was not so great in September. I think even the last 6 weeks of the year, which is arguable just at face value, because while the batting average was low during that stretch, he still hit for power. I mean, he was still a productive fantasy option. So, I mean, I think there are so many ways you could slice up a season and make an argument that make the argument that you want to make, as we've encountered on several occasions with Taijuan Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line is, I think it was clear he was a different player when he came back, and taking the full sample, those 4 months or 3.5 months, that was first round caliber production. So if you have a guy who's worried about him because of how he started this year, which, by the way, he has several extra base hits already, so, you know, batting average is low, but whatever. If his owner's feeling that way, yeah, I think it's worth making an offer.
All right, that's Rougned Odor. Any other names, guys, that you'd be looking to buy low on?
Kedrys Morales kind of stands out to me, because he's really hurt by the batting average and on-base percentage, but he's hit with some power. I think he's, it's a little bit early to be talking about this, but he's, you know, one of the people I think who's just really getting BABIPed in a bad way. And, yeah, I think that the batting average will come. And it's encouraging to see some power there, but somebody might be frustrated with that low batting average and sell them off really cheap.
You guys can keep going. I don't know how many you have. I'm happy to throw out names that you can discuss.
Well, I kind of want to, not necessarily people that I'm pursuing, but again, more kind of a, you know, I guess fantasy philosophy kind of issue, is that there's players like Ian Desmond and also at a much higher level, Miguel Sano, who are struggling early, but they're both players that I was really uncertain about coming into the year. I think I was lower on Sano than a lot of people, worried that the batting average wasn't going to be there. It was going to be strictly power for him. And if the power wasn't there in the way that it was last year, he was going to be sort of a bust. And Desmond had a really nice second half last year, but the first half was pretty atrocious and the overall trends not been great for Desmond. So these are guys that I could see them going in either direction. But you could say, all right, well, they're getting off the slow starts. Maybe you could buy them at a discount right now. But I'm really hesitant with guys like that.
Okay. Yeah.
So I feel much safer going with somebody like Granderson, who I went into the season feeling pretty confident I knew he was going to be.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point.
And then there's kind of a flip side when we talk about the sell high guys. That the guys that I could project a lot of upside for,
yeah,
I'm really hesitant to trade, i.e. Trevor Story.
Exactly. That's why I can't get behind trading Trevor Story, because, I mean, what is the sell high for him, first of all? Is it a mid-round middle infielder like, I don't know, like a Jason Kipnis or an Ian Kinsler?
No, it's clearly Aaron Sanchez and Alcides Escobar in a Roto League.
I guess in a technical sense, looking at my rankings, that would be a sell high for Trevor Story, the example I just gave. But if he's a 30-homer shortstop, which I think is highly possible, I basically predicted that on the last podcast, then that's going to be more valuable than those guys. So, I mean, Yeah, you can get caught up in the sell low, sell high games this early before anyone really knows what's going on. And I guess that's the whole idea is, you know, you could take advantage of someone who doesn't really know what's going on, but you don't either. And you could end up shooting yourself in the foot in the name of selling high.
Well, here's an email from Stefan from Toronto. Do you guys think Carlos Gomez will break out of his season plus 1 week long funk he's been in and actually become a great fantasy asset again? Would you buy low on Carlos Gomez?
See, I that kind of gets back to what Al's saying. There's a certain level you have to value him at because he's Carlos Gomez and he's capable of certainly in categories contributing in a way a lot of players can't with the power speed combo. But I had a lot of big concerns about him coming into the season with, I mean, obviously coming off a bad year and how much of what that was regression, how much of it was related to injury. It's hard to say. He wasn't very good this spring. He's not off to a good start. Unless I really needed speed, I can't see myself being the guy who makes that offer. And another guy I could lump in with Carlos Gomez for the same reasons is Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah,
who's batting 107 so far, has struck out 12 times in 28 at-bats, just looking awful. Now, I mean, could he still have a really good season? Yeah, I mean, he's still high in my rankings, but I can't see myself giving up anything of the value it would take to get him right now.
Here's someone I'm thinking about offering. I don't know exactly what his value is, but I know you guys were high on him, especially Heath and Scott. I don't quite know where Al stood on. Yordano Ventura, he's only had one start. He walked six. That was weird. And he struck out six in five innings. It was a pretty good starter than the walks. I don't know. I feel like he's such an inconsistent pitcher. So I don't know. I could, because I'm in five leagues with Heath, I feel like maybe I could sell high in Yordano Ventura.
I was very, very big on Ventura when we were drafting.
Okay.
And I found those six walks to be a little troubling, you know, because that's one of the things that I was hoping he would leave behind this year is the really big control issues. Sell high? No, I wouldn't try to.
All right.
Well, you're saying, yeah, sell high.
I mean, it's not even that high, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think it's just a Heath thing.
Yeah, that's a whole separate, category of trades there.
All right, well, here's a good candidate that I'd like to get your thoughts on. Mark Trumbo. Right now, he's hitting .464 with two home runs, one walk, and three strikeouts. Last year was an exception. 2015, he actually was fine in the second half, but Mark Trumbo, in his career, has an 809 OPS in the first half and a 709 OPS in the second half. I do remember that about him. He's kind of like Todd Frazier. He would really struggle in the second half. I don't think you sell high on Trumbo now because he's the kind of guy who could be great for like a month straight. But do you think he is that guy, Trumbo, that will put up most of his numbers in a short period of time and be someone that you want to trade for the second half of the season?
I don't think so. And you kind of referred to how that wasn't the case. It was just the reverse last year. And kind of thinking over his career, I know there were some circumstances, some injury situations. I think it was a back 1 year and a foot 1 year that he kind of played through in the second half, and that probably affected his production.
But it's pretty much every year except for last year.
Well, how long has his career been? 6 years?
Yeah.
I mean, we just talked about three of those years where there were other things going on, so I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I guess I see your point, and if he's still rolling early June, maybe that's something we talk about. Right now as a Trumbo owner, which, by the way, I only am in categories leagues and roto leagues. If it was a points league, I think his skill set is so replaceable in that format that maybe you do look to sell him for whatever you can get. But in a categories league where I have him, I'm excited about what he's done because that was some cheap power I got. And I think, you know, the last couple of years they were injury plagued, but I think he improved as a hitter overall, cutting down on a strikeout rate. So he's not going to be as much big of a liability in batting average as I think we used to think of him as. I really like him as a corner infield type in roto.
So who are some sell high candidates, if any, guys that you're just not buying or that you think you can get a lot for?
Well, one for me is Eugenio Suarez. And it's, you know, this is where I kind of realized that I have this double standard with sell high, because I'd be much more likely to trade him than Trevor Story, because, you know, I'm not surprised to see Suarez do what he's doing right now. He's the sort of guy I could say, yeah, for a couple of weeks, he could go off on a big power binge because he's been a pretty good power hitter all along. But I think he's eventually going to settle into something that's less than, you know, considerably less than what he's doing right now. Whereas, you know, Story, we hadn't even seen him in the majors before. And I'm not so certain about it. Plus just his power binge is so outsized. It's like, okay, well, was he going to come back down to earth too? So, you know, with Suarez, I just feel like I better understand what the risks are, and I definitely would be okay with trading him right now.
Scott, anyone for you?
Edinson Volquez jumps out with those 15 strikeouts in 11 and two thirds innings, and presumably a lot of wins potential with the Royals. But there's a pretty, even the last 2 years, as good as they were, he was kind of just a boring fantasy option. I think maybe there's a chance you could get somebody to believe he's more exciting than he is and make a trade. DJ LeMahieu, because they're, you know, the Coors Field angle, and there's a little bit of name value there. The fact he has two home runs already, he's not a power hitter. So it might be a good time to consider selling on him. You know, I could probably come up. Oh, wow. Tyler White is the top first baseman in points league so far. That is fun.
Yeah, well, he's another one. He's right in the same category with Story for me. I feel like I should be trading him right now. I own a lot of them.
Right.
But it's really hard for me to do that.
And he was a waiver claim, you know, the last 5 days. So I feel like the guy somebody saw you pick up off the waiver wire just a few days ago is always going to be hard to trade. Okay. Anyway,
would you sell high on David Ortiz?
No. I think the kind of start David Ortiz is off to shouldn't surprise anyone because he's always been this good. And I'm glad he's retiring this year because we never have to see him not be good anymore.
Would you sell high on Starlin Castro?
Maybe. He's got a bit of the Yankees hype going on. I do think he's going to be a viable starter in mixed leagues all year, but right now, you know, batting .391 with two home runs already, that's probably exceeding his potential.
Yeah, he's pretty similar to Suarez for me. I was pretty excited about what Castro did late last year, but shortstop has gotten so much better, so much deeper, and I think Castro's value probably is inflated right now, and I trust myself to find a good replacement.
Well, if you think he has Yankees hype, I got an IM this morning from one of the Yankees fans who works in the office, and he said, "What do you think about this new Yankees lineup? Didi, Starlin, McCann, McCann, Starlin, Didi, Starlin, McCann, and Didi." The only three Yankees who are hitting. I said, "Well, McCann's going to be out today, so what do you think?" He said, "Didi, Starlin, 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 Didi, Starlin, Starlin, and Didi." So, yes.
Best middle of field of baseball.
I like that lineup worse than the Yankees' actual lineup. So.
Me too. All right, let's grade some trades. Trade emails. Part one. We'll see if we have time for part two a little bit later. Danny Milliken, give up Trevor Story, get Yu Darvish. Remember, C is average. Anything better than a C is a good trade.
It's above a C for me. I'm gonna. Eesh.
I was gonna say C minus because I don't think you have to give up that much for Darvish. Maybe this guy did, but I don't think most people would.
Well, I'm gonna go C plus.
Okay.
All right. From Gord Henderson, head-to-head points keeper league. Give up Bryant and Ellsbury, get Josh Donaldson. Bryant and Ellsbury for Donaldson.
You know, head-to-head points, I'm assuming three outfielder league.
Uh-huh. And it could be
Bryant.
A dozen. It could be three. You know. I'll take the better player. This is a good. Good consolidation type trade to make in those shallower formats.
I'm going so, B minus.
Yeah, I need a grade, right? I'll go B plus.
From Bip G, my Billy Burns for his Chris Carter. Ooh, I bet he wished he had waited a day before that. Billy Burns with two steals last night.
Yeah, but there's a lot of reason to be worried about Billy Burns. I don't know if now's the time to get into it.
Well,
but
we talked about it yesterday, and all I'm going to say is Coco Crisp is not going to take. Like, he's going to get hurt, right?
That's fair. In the long run, I do think Burns will be an everyday player. And speed is scarcer than power, so I don't know what format this is, but I'd definitely rather have Burns than Carter. I'll give it a B.
No, you'll give it a D.
D.
Because he gave up Burns for Carter.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I made the same mistake, so I'm giving it a D+.
This is from Brendan. He says, grade the trade, and he says, hey, Arnold, Gerald, and Helga.
Hey, Arnold.
Yeah, they are.
I wasn't repeating the line. That's what it's from.
You're right. I have Corey Seager in my shortstop position in a 10-team points league. So, you're not going to like this one. And we should talk about Jose Fernandez. It's a good springboard to talk about Fernandez. Give up Jose Fernandez. Get Masahiro Tanaka and Trevor Story. He already has Seager. Give up Jose Fernandez for Tanaka and Story.
For even if he didn't have Seager. No way.
Yeah.
This is D-.
This is contextual lost credit here. This is, you left your name off your paper and I had to figure out whose it was. So I'm annoyed and going to give you a lower grade. What did you say? D+?
I said D-.
Okay. D- also.
Do you guys?
I mean, the terms in another format, this would actually be a decent trade, but it's just bad. A 10-team league.
Do you think, is there any reason to worry about Jose Fernandez, who has gone 5 innings in both starts? Well, 5 2/3 in his first start.
He really struggled the first couple of innings. And then he just flipped a switch and got his command back and cruised. I think that's going to be more typical of his starts to come. He'll go deeper.
Yeah.
I think they're going to manage his innings more with skipping starts than with shortening them. So no concern.
And the fact he struck out 13 in his first start. I mean, I am a little uneasy because he never struggled before he had Tommy John surgery. And after returning last year, we saw him struggle at times. The first two starts have been, you know, some good, but a lot of bad too. So I am a little uneasy, but I'm not really changing my evaluation of him based on that.
What about Masahiro Tanaka? What do you think about him? He's also part of this. And I'm going to give you his stats from Brooks Baseball. In his two starts against the Astros and the Blue Jays, Tanaka has thrown his four-seam fastball 1.15% of the time and 4.35% of the time. He is completely afraid to throw his fastball. All he's throwing is junk, basically, and some sinkers. And that is concerning to me. And I don't mean junk like bad pitches. I mean junk like off-speed pitches, you know. What do you think about Tanaka right now, who has not gotten past the fifth inning in either of his two starts?
I was not really excited about drafting him, and I'd be even less excited about getting him on my roster right now. So there's that just constant concern about whether or not his elbow's going to hold up. And then you just factor into that he's just not performed well so far.
Yeah, well, I mean, he hasn't performed that badly. He gave up 2 runs at Toronto. They were Jacoby Ellsbury's fault. And he gave up 2 runs against Houston. If he gets his fastball back, he could be good. But I agree. There's reason to be uneasy about Tanaka.
The velocity is just not there.
This is from Dan. In a head-to-head points league, another owner is looking for a left fielder. It's stacked at center field. Would you trade Cespedes for Charlie Blackmon? Give up Cespedes, get Charlie Blackmon.
You know, we didn't talk about Blackmon as a possible buy low. This is not really a buy low, though. In fact, they're both sort of buy lows. Cespedes for Blackmon. But I would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much a C trade. Maybe between C and C+, because I do like Blackmon a little more.
Yeah, I forgot the great C+.
One more for now. Zach in Chicago, grade the trade. This is a diehard reference. Dear John Sargent AL, I don't know the second stupid diehard. It's the worst. And Hans, although Sargent AL, is it supposed to be Sargent Al? Is that one of the guys, the FBI guys? Or is that, man.
What was Reginald Val Johnson's character name?
That's who I was thinking of in the second one. All right, whatever. I have to go to IMDb.
He's in the first one, too.
Oh, is that the cop? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, from, you know, the guy from Family Matters.
Family Matters. Yeah, that's who it might be.
Maybe.
Yeah, because he calls him Al. This guy threw me off because he capitalized both A and L. So thanks a lot, Zach in Chicago. Give. Here's your stupid trade. Give Felix Hernandez Hanley Ramirez and Victor Martinez. Ooh, all three end in EZ, huh? Felix Hernandez, Hanley Ramirez, and Victor Martinez get Clayton Kershaw. 12-team, 5x5.
Or Kershaw's. That's a B.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the 3-for-1 instead of the 2 we usually see. And it's not terrible. I just think the third player, as much as I like Victor Martinez, it's not enough to really put it over the top. And I'll agree the Kershaw side's better. And so, yeah, B sounds good.
Yeah, I didn't even really factor V-Mart into the trade because I think he's sort of borderline in the format.
Yeah.
So, fellas, let's talk about yesterday's action, but we don't have that much time left, so we'll do it a little bit quickly here. Corey Kluber, any concerns about him? I know, look, 19 swinging strikes, that's pretty damn good, but his velocity is down, and he got beat on a fastball. He gave up a 2-run homer that eventually lost them the game. Do you see any red flags with Kluber?
No. If he can get the opponent to swing and miss 19 times, he's obviously making do with what he's got. So I'm not concerned.
His velocity is not down as most pitchers. I mean, most pitchers, it's like 2 down now. He's just 1 down.
Al, can you see, is it possible to see which pitches he got the swings and misses on?
Yes.
I would like to know if he got many on his fastball, because his slider was terrific. I don't know about the fastball. In the meantime, here are some hitters who were good yesterday or have been good. Well, we talked about Billy Burns briefly. Corey Seager's off to a nice start. He does not have any home runs, but he has four doubles, and he's batting .333 in 8 games. That's Corey Seager. J.J. Hardy homered twice yesterday. And Angel Pagan is the number 3 outfielder in fantasy in both points and roto, and he's 31% owned. Scott, when you're looking at Seager, Hardy, and Pagan, anything jump off the page at you?
No. I mean, Seager and Hardy, I think they still are who we thought they were. Hardy been single-digit home runs the last 2 years, so I'm not buying a power resurgence for him. But Pagan is always easy to overlook, and I guess it's because he's injured half the time. Yeah. But when he's healthy, he's usually a viable option in points leagues. Last year, not so much. And he actually did stay healthier than usual last year. So I was, you know, guy in his mid-30s, I was thinking this is the end. But, you know, based on the vast majority of his career, I think this start is something to pay attention to, because he's showing the extra base power. He's running 2 stolen bases already. The good plate discipline. That's kind of a poor man's Denard Span, who we've been saying all along is a very startable option in points leagues. I think Pagan is, if you're in a pinch, somebody you could think about picking up.
Would you rather have Pagan or Jorge Soler?
Soler. I mean, I'm still going to go for upside. And you know, if I needed a guy right now to start, maybe I would think Pagan in a points league, but I'd rather own Soler.
Would you rather have Pagan? Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No. I mean, I was just going to echo what Scott said. So
Pagan or Jeremy Hazelbaker?
Pagan.
Yeah, I don't buy Hazelbaker at all.
Okay. 2 down. Any concerns about Freddie Freeman, who's batting 095 with a home run, but 7 walks, 7 strikeouts. Concerns about Freeman?
Well, no, not really, but I'm hesitating because the 7 walks, I mean, I am interested to see how much he's getting pitched to at this point. So that'd be my only concern.
And would you put the buy low tag on Freddie Freeman?
I'd be more likely to do that than the freak out tag.
Yeah.
Are you ready to drop Jackie Bradley, who's batting .238 with 1 double?
Now, I own a lot of them, and I'm not ready yet.
I think he's pretty expendable, so, you know, I'd be okay wasting him, but I understand why Al still likes him.
And it's, I mean, when I say I'm not ready, you know, give me a week or two. it's not going to be long if he doesn't pick it up. I've got some Corey Kluber numbers for you.
Hit me with it, because I'm working on I have the framework of a theory developing here, but go ahead.
Okay.
All right, well, I hope it's a theory that involves him getting whiffs on a lot of different pitches.
No.
5 on the 4-seamer. 4 on the sinker, 5 on the slider, 5 on the cutter, 1 from the changeup.
This is why analytics are good. My theory, I'm tossing it out. Tossing it out. Forget it. No concern. Well, you know, the only thing I noticed is that his velocity was basically the same at the end of last year as, you know, probably the last 2 months of last year as it is now. And he's given up two home runs in two starts, and he gave up a lot of home runs in the last couple of months last season. So I'm just wondering if one thing leads to another, and that's when you could have a guy who strikes out a ton of batters and looks good peripherally, but gives up runs because he gives up home runs. And that was my concern with Kluber, but I think I'm probably overreacting. So no concerns. Six-man rotation. Who jumped out at you? What a weird start from Patrick Corbin. One strikeout in six innings against the Dodgers, but only one run. Kenta Maeda, another good one. Two straight starts with six innings, five hits, no runs, four strikeouts. In this one, no walks. In the first one, or in this one, one walk. In the first one, no walks.
Yeah, I did a double take when I saw the game log because it was virtually identical, the line.
Yep, just one walk.
Yeah.
Gio Gonzalez had a good start against the Braves. Matt Moore bounced back with a good one against Cleveland. And Jeff Samardzija, eight innings, two runs at Colorado.
At Colorado.
What do you guys, what jumps out at you guys there?
There's actually a lot to bite into here, I think. And Corbin kind of speaks for himself, but Maeda, I actually, when we were talking about Sal Heise a minute ago, I was scanning through the points rankings at every position, and I paused on Maeda because I thought for a moment, yeah, maybe he is a Sal High, but I think there's just too much of a chance that he's good, you know, kind of like I was saying with Trevor Story, because, I mean, he definitely was good in Japan. He won their version of the Cy Young last year, and it was the second time he had done that. So it's just a matter of, can he be good enough to get to still be high end without the bat missing ability? And you know, several pitchers are. I mean, Wainwright has been for a lot of his career. Iwakuma, Stroman, I think a lot of people think he could be. Dallas Keuchel was last year before he did start striking out guys eventually. And I think Maeda just has a varied enough arsenal and really, really good control that it's going to be hard to bench him ever.
So far, so good for Kenta Maeda.
Yeah.
Gio Gonzalez, you know, just one thing to point out, in two starts against the Braves last year, 13 innings, 7 hits, 2 earned, 5 walks, 18 strikeouts. So he was great against them last year. But I know Scott's somebody you liked quite a bit as a sleeper.
Yeah, I think a lot of bad luck for Gio. I think he's going to have a Francisco Liriano type season. I almost said Lindor. I don't know what it is about young shortstops, similar names to pitchers. And then Matt Moore's the other one. I mean, Samardzija, I think, you know, it's obviously a weird thing. He was terrible, and then he was great at Coors Field, and we don't know who he is. But I still feel like I don't know who he is, so I don't even know that I can say anything about that start.
This is like the worst possible pitcher to start off the season this way. We were already confused about Jeff Samardzija. He's just made it worse.
Yeah. Matt Moore, though. I've been excited about Matt Moore. I know there's a pretty big divide in the office. You have the Heath Chris Tower side and the Al and me side on Matt Moore.
That's why we sit in different parts of the department.
The control's been great so far, and I think you feel like that was the turning point for him last year. I think that's part of my argument. I also just really like the upside. I would like to see more strikeouts, but you know, one walk in a seven inning start from Matt Moore is a big step forward over what he was doing before Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great sign. I'm really bummed I didn't draft more of them.
By the way,
not intended.
Yeah, very good. By the way, Rafael Montero was called up by the Mets. I think that had to do with the paternity leave for DeGrom, but also he could start. I mean, DeGrom, if he goes on the DL, is Montero, can we... Okay, Montero has an amazing start, and Bartolo Colon, see you later. Or Steven Matz, if you keep struggling, maybe you get demoted briefly. Like, is Montero interesting?
Well, I mean, he kind of is, but I was sort of looking to Logan Verrett as being more the guy who would create that scenario. But, I don't know now. I think maybe it could be either one. But
well, Verrett is starting today.
He is.
So that's that.
And it's in DeGrom's slot, right?
Yes.
So you know, there'd be no problem with keeping him in there, especially if he fares well against the Marlins. At this stage, I'm just more interested in Verrett. Although Montero certainly, you know, a few years ago looked like he was going to be a really good prospect.
Turbo speed for the rest of the podcast. Who's your favorite of this group? Clay Buchholz, Chris Medlin, Mike Fiers, Hector Santiago.
Still Fiers for me.
Me as well.
And
I would have, that's been reversed. I'd say Medlin's a player I've changed my position on a little bit since the beginning of the season. He just hasn't been that good.
Okay. And DFS, I don't know if you guys have made a lineup. I like Carlos Carrasco tonight at Tampa Bay. I think if you want to save money a pitcher, Jared Eichhoff is interesting against San Diego. I like left-handed Tigers against Ryan Vogelsong. I don't think Victor Martinez is going to play, though, so, you know, NL Park, you probably want to get him out of there. That means they don't really have a lot of lefties.
I was trying to think of who they are.
Well, yeah. It's funny. I made a lineup with Victor Martinez, and to thinking out loud right now, I definitely have to change that line, even though I can't submit it. But FanDuel, go to FanDuel.com and play right now on FanDuel.com. Daily fantasy baseball. You will love it. FanDuel is the best. I have tried the other websites. I mean, I love FanDuel, and I wish I were able to play, but I love at least being able to give you guys advice on how to make your FanDuel lineup. You choose from any player available in baseball that is playing on that day or that night. You can do just the night contest. You can do the day contest, whatever it is. But go to FanDuel, great podcast for you, Daily Fantasy Live, to help you set your lineup. And new users, we have this special offer. Sign up today. Enter your first league. Either win a cash prize in that league or FanDuel will automatically refund your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. So that's go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Sign up with our promo code. It's Home Run, H-O-M-E-R-U-N, Home Run, no spaces. If you do that as a new user, you can enter a contest up to $10 and either win a cash prize or get your money back for additional play on FanDuel.com. The best, the only place to play your daily fantasy baseball. And with that said, let's grade some trades. Last, we'll finish up here just a couple minutes, guys. From Sam in Boston. Head-to-head categories. I'm mostly posting this to brag, but I'm curious if I sold at the right time. As the Lindor owner, he gave away Trevor Story, Drew Smiley, and Delino DeShields. Gave up Story, Smiley, and DeShields. Got Salazar, Polanco, and Ziegler.
Well, part of my assessment is how much I come to like Polanco with the way he started. I do think it's a win, but not, you know, not a slaughter. I'll go B
minus.
Grade the trade from Brian. My $3 Marcus Semien or Marcus Stroman. My $3 Marcus Stroman for his $19 Chris Davis in a 12-team keeper league, deep league, 7x7.
Yeah, that change in the last name changes the value of the trade quite a bit. Yeah. It's still a win. I'll call it a B.
Yeah, I agree.
Now here's how you sell high on Trevor Story. This is from Dave. Give up Story and Cole Hamels, get Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah, that's good. That's a B.
I'll go B plus.
Here's one from Cole. Would you trade Gregory Polanco for Carlos Gomez?
Nope.
Yep. Right? I agree with Al. I would not.
And I was offered Julio Teheran for Yu Darvish. Would you do that? Would you give up Darvish for Julio Teheran?
No, I wouldn't.
Neither would I. And going back to the Polanco-Gomez thing real quick, I know I still have Gomez ranked ahead of Polanco, but that was the exact example I used earlier for a player I'm just not comfortable trading for right now.
Gotcha. Well, that's it for today's show. Thank you for all your trades that you submitted. Hopefully we were helpful. Tomorrow, we'll dive in a little bit deeper to Noah Syndergaard. I will ask Al, Chris, and Heath, would they rather have Syndergaard or this guy? Syndergaard or that guy? And we'll figure it out. And, you know, much more from the Wednesday action in baseball. For Al Melchior and Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. We'll talk to you tomorrow.